But, in general, you are like an invisible and mysterious presence which a witness attends the events from a height of 3 or maybe 4 meters. The travel is done instantaneously by simply manifesting your will. A bit farther on my left, after a hillock, I saw a few people sitting on a large cloth and involved, very preoccupied. I wanted to be there and I was immediately above them. In other circumstances, I saw that I could move even slower as if I flew over the landscape. It all depended on my thoughts and on my power to focus them. If the participation was not intense, there was the tendency to slip out of that Akashic cliché tilde copyright. The atmosphere seemed to become dark and lost a lot of the brightness as the environment became somewhat diffused until it completely disappeared. My consciousness came back to the present time, but this return felt more like a tear in a TM from the time zone which was accessed. In general, when returning to the present, you feel that you are closer to yourself. But I am especially referring to the objects around you and the personal memories of your existence. AOTTM telling you this because, when I came near that group of people, I clearly alived a TM that sensation of losing focus. Would TMLL have the chance to see that sensations are somehow different than those of daily life? Perceptions are wider and simultaneous. For example, even from the first moments of the projection, I felt the atmosphere TM of the place. I knew very well where I was and in what period of time, and especially, I emphatically knew who some of the people I saw were. Time projections arena TMT random, and they always lead you to the place in space and time which is nearest to the intention of your thought. This observation refers both to people and places. When you follow the events, it RTMS like a process of knowledge which looks like being present in those times or places and taking part in those actions or events. The sensations are live and clear. But at the same time you feel that you are not involved in what you perceive. In order to give you a better image of these things, I'll tell you that they happen in about the same way as if you were in a cinema and saw a movie you like very much. However, the time projection is much more than that. You feel more than a simple spectator, no matter how attracted that spectator is to the movie. You can perceive the nuances of people's TMS souls, you can see the results of their intrigues, and all this is, I repeat, a kind of global perception you live every second. Of course, this knowledge can sometimes be partial or even vague. You might not see the cliché tilde copyright s or hear all of the sounds. It RTMS possible that you won a TMT understand the source of certain events or are simply confronted with time blockages when you can a TMT access certain Akashic cliché tilde copyright s. However, this a time travel machine a TM helps a lot with the almost perfect perception of the Akashic cliché tilde copyright s. AAO, have you ever been confronted with such situations? I asked. Of course, many times. The first time when I understood what a time blockage was occurred during the projection EATMM telling you about. First, ATMS that sensation of a darkening of the time cliché tilde copyright, then everything disappears suddenly and only a perfectly black background remains. Then, the consciousness comes back to the present. Anytime you try to access that time zone, you'll hit the same barrier which seems impossible to overcome. AATMS similar to the situation of the data you wanted to obtain concerning the builders of this tunnel / ATM, I said. Exactly. Their knowledge is so advanced that they could block, in a mysterious way, the access to that information of the Akashic cliché tilde copyright s. The greater problem is, why did they bother to do this? It RTMS an important aspect which has unfortunately remained a mystery so, 9, far. I felt warmer and warmer sitting on the platform of the installation. Even if I was not TMT connected to it, I seemed surrounded by an unseen penetrating force. I had feeling that my neck was swallowing and felt a strange weakness in my feet. Getting up from that place and sitting on a pedestal, I asked Caesar to go on telling me about his amazing experience during that time travel. The time lesson, it was a group of about 15 people who were talking about a very important subject, However, one of them seemed to have a noon questionable authority because he spoke more often than all of the others and they listened to him with great concentration. Through a kind of intuitive empathy, I knew that was Jesus. This knowledge occurs spontaneously, as if it were natural. But, what is more amazing is that I could understand what they said and the idea of the phrases they uttered, as if it were a telepathic transmission, but not necessarily the words. When I realized this, I was very happy because I had direct access to Jesus's words and to his real teachings for his followers. Many of these teachings were hidden for a long time or changed according to certain interests which had nothing to do with spirituality. I've also done some research about this because I was curious to know more about some unorthodox opinions about those times. I said. In Eleanora TMS library, I found some pertinent works which are strictly based on some scrolls containing Christian texts which are considered apocryphal by the Church. I have to tell you that, in spite of my initial reservations, I had to notice the correctness of the analysis and scientific observations made. I've reached the conclusion that some facts and pieces of evidence from that period of time should, by no means be ignored. And I can assure you that I'm right because I followed several of the events that took place during those times as a subtle witness, said Caesar. TMS completely different than reading the texts that describe those times, and the canonical gospels only cover a small part of what happened. The feeling I had was overwhelming and often dramatic. I'm telling you with complete honesty that I've never felt such an emotional load. Everything vibrated in the air and was full of a feeling of a happiness which is completely different from that of the physical worlds. People seemed to experience a new dimension of their existence. They were in a kind of a drunken state of mind. Many of Christ's TMS followers, I can tell you now in anticipation, were so transfigured and interiorized that I often saw them cry without reason, but at the same time, smiling in happiness. It was utterly amazing. That state was also transmitted to me and was greatly amplified in Jesus' TMS presence. The crowds that followed him were not large because the population was also reduced, but when they listened to him, those persons were completely transposed to a state of emotion and love that I've rarely met. I also had the impression that, in those times, the area seemed utterly purified and somehow erased from a subtle point of view. It's very difficult to express in words, but the general idea is that something truly divine was happening there. And those people, even if they were of a modest social condition, experienced truly sublime moments. I noticed several times that they were also amazed by the frenzy of their inner state and were wondering if others felt the same way. I also saw persons with higher social ranks whose material wealth could be seen by the clothes they were wearing and by the servants accompanying them. Usually, these persons stayed a bit more withdrawn, but they also experienced a deep piousness, and in those moments, gave up pride or disdain. Silent and interiorized, they listened to Jesus with a look full of nostalgia and even an inner regret. An inner spiritual transformation probably took place in some of those persons so that their lives changed. But how did Jesus talk to the people? I asked emotionally as a result of what I heard. How did he behave? Was he in the middle of the crowd? Saw him speaking in the crowd, but usually preferred to stay in front of the people and to see everybody, especially when there were many persons present. The impression was overwhelming. I've never seen anything similar. What the Bible relates is only a pale image of the way he manifested. As far as I know, his attitude was never described, nor was the phenomenal radiation he spread over people. Of course, these are subtle aspects of nuances, and it's clear that the accent was placed on the succession of facts which was also synthesized, but I can tell you that those moments were truly impressive. As a person, Jesus was not tall. I don't think he was higher than 1.70 meters, and this is why, many times, he was not visible in the crowd. You've also had the chance to convince yourself about this when you saw the holographic recordings in the projection chamber. Like all other modest people, he wore a very long shirt down to his ankles, made of a rather rough cloth. It was open up to the chest and sometimes it was tied around the waist with a girdle made of the same material. The sleeves were very large and a bit above the wrists. Underneath, he sometimes wore another shirt which was thinner and white, but he often gave it up. I saw his bare chest and his dark brown hair falling over his shoulders and skin. I was amazed to see that he wore a beard, but almost all men wore beards during those times. From some time projections I made during the same period of time, however, I noticed that his beard had different sizes and I understood that, from time to time, he shaved. Yes, Yadmov also noticed that he did not really look like the representations of Christ from our churches, I said, indirectly referring to the holographic projections I saw 2 years before. AOTMS practically no similarity of physiognomy between the statues or icons of Christ and the reality. I could not identify any similarity except that his body was not very vigorous but rather thin. If I had taken as a sole point of reference the icons of Christ I have seen, I would not have been able to identify him between the other people because his characteristics were different than the ones displayed in icons. For example, his nose was wider towards the nostrils. You could immediately notice the high forehead and the well-shaped eyebrows. But, most impressive were his eyes. I can say that they were the extraordinary magnet of his being for everyone who came closer to talk to him. He had such a deep look and such a lively expression in his eyes that, almost with no exceptions, those who got in front of him to talk to him were so emotionally moved that they often started to cry with no apparent reason. In such cases, however, I noticed that he did not make them stand up from where they lowered themselves to cry but waited patiently and seriously for them to recover. And when they got up, he radiated such goodness that very few said anything else. Most of them left with a look of happiness and contentment that exceeded by far any other problems. He spoke rarely but in a very condensed fashion that was full of substance. I perceived the meaning of his words intuitively as if I were among the others who knew the language, and I truly heard some of the parables in the Gospels. But they were not told with the same continuity which is presented in the texts because he was often asked questions while he spoke and there was a general bustle around him. Many people came and went. There were many small children and domestic animals around because many of those who accompanied him for longer periods of time also took their goats or sheep with them. In the beginning, there was a certain to and fro movement around, but I noticed that, as time passed, those around him who were close to him started to organize better. It is true that they did this in a somewhat rudimentary manner, but there was more order. Between others, I witnessed the parable of the sower. Actually, Jesus spoke more about it and even in two stages. Do you want me to tell you by what circumstances he was inspired to tell this parable? I nodded my head quickly and was all ears. A woman, who I suppose was noble, had come to him. She complained that one of her sons, taking advantage of his status at the royal court, did many evil deeds and the poor woman suffered because of this almost all the time. Only her daughter helped her and stayed beside her, but she was not a believer. The woman could not understand where she did wrong because she regularly visited the temple, brought sacrifices and prayed for her sons, but they led very disordered lives. I saw Jesus look at that woman silently for a long time. Then he asked her if she had come with any of her sons or at least with her daughter. The woman had come without telling anyone. Then, Jesus started to give her advice, telling her that her prayers were more valuable than the violent fights she had almost daily in her family and that it was better to stop them. The woman looked at him troubled because she had not mentioned anything about this and then started to cry, understanding that the person in front of her was much more than she had imagined. Afterwards, she made a sign and a servant came and brought a sack of flour and one with food, as a gift from her. I believe that was the moment of divine inspiration which triggered in Jesus the impulse to tell the parable of the sower. First, I saw him looking at the sack of flour and then, judging by the way he looked and got ready to talk, I understood that he already knew the course of the story. He started telling the parable, but soon a group of Roman soldiers on horseback came. I realized that Jesus knew their leader. They withdrew from the crowd to talk and I saw that the Roman showed him some papers with a seal. Because it was already dusk, the people started to spread and did not yet wait for Jesus to return and continue the parable. Only long afterwards, I think 2 or 3 weeks later, and in a completely different place, when only those close to him and a few other persons were present, was he reminded of that parable which he had begun and was asked to continue. Jesus said that he knew very well what he wanted to say, and it was not for the many but for the few. He added that the fact that people scattered without waiting for him to return and continue the story had deprived them of its hidden but precious content. In a way, he underlined that what happened then was just like what he was about to say in his parable. Nobody spoke in those moments and his presence, standing like that, was so majestic and dignified that I saw that everyone present had bowed their heads, looking at the ground. I noticed this extraordinary effect several times when Jesus spoke to the people and especially during his memorable preaching on the stairs of a huge temple after his so-called entrance into Jerusalem. Actually, things were more complicated back then. His entrance to the town took place in 4 days because many events which are not described in the Bible took place. I will not, however, insist upon this. Some of these aspects are delicate. What I'm trying to tell you is that, at a certain time, favorable circumstances were created and a group of people asked him to talk about what happens after death. In those moments, Jesus was descending the steps of the temple. He was accompanied by 2 young women and 4 of his main disciples. I saw him stop and turn a bit to the right where several persons stood. Then, a few bizarre things happened. After he said this, Caesar stopped, thinking and surely, rewinding the film of those epochal events in his mind. I was extremely impatient as I dared to ask him what happened and how things evolved. This section of the events is not described nor remembered in any text, he said. It seems that a strange forgetting a TM of time has covered those who were present there and then. I could not find out too much either and for a very strange reason which I'm going to tell you. As I saw the scene, a bit from above, I was somewhat on Jesus' left. I saw him suddenly look to the right towards a small group of people while he was very attentive and concentrating. Out of that group, a strange person came out. It was a man who seemed to have blonde hair and had a very negligent aspect. He looked very emotional and unsure of himself. He sat a bit inclined on his back and with his right hand under his long shirt which covered his legs. I remember that this was the first detail that drew my attention because all others were wearing shirts down to their ankles. I noticed that the man was agitated and always looked to his sides. Jesus made a few steps towards him and told him a few words which also left me astonished. He told the man that he had not chosen the right time to do what he wanted to do and that those who sent him would understand. He then added something amazing by telling him he had to return immediately where he came from because there was a malfunction and he was in great danger. The man looked him in the eyes for a few moments, then suddenly seemed to soften and had convulsions. In a low voice, they exchanged a few words which I could not hear. Immediately afterwards, he withdrew among people and then 2 things happened simultaneously which I still can't explain. A short, threatening and very powerful roar was heard over all the settlement, and almost immediately, many people started gathering in front of the temple at the base of the stairs, asking insistently for Jesus to talk to them. I moved instantaneously as I was very curious to see how that man was who was so different from the others and who had behaved so strangely and to whom Jesus had given so much attention. Although localizing any point in space or any person was normally done immediately upon the manifestation of my will, I didn't manage to move at all. I remained in my place as if there was nowhere for me to project. I rewinded the Akashic Cliche copyright a bit, but I could not identify that person. Nothing like that had never happened to me before. It was as if that man disappeared. "Ao, do you have any idea what this could mean?" I asked, with curiosity. "Ao, there are some assumptions, but I would rather not share them yet. They belong to an area which can be understood by men only with great difficulty." I insisted, however, and Caesar eventually told me what it was about but asked me not to write about it. He had made some connections and had done some research in this direction, and while he was almost sure of his conclusion, it was so shattering that I was stunned and did not know what to say. Eventually, I got back to his initial story. "Ao, you did not tell me what the first impact TM was when you accomplished your first projection. You know, on that hill slope where Jesus spoke to some of his disciples." "Ao, you're right. But I wanted to give you an overview of the situation first, as well as some concrete facts. There is too much to tell you, and this is why I'll only specify some aspects. Even in the reports I made a synthetic presentation because it is practically impossible to underline every element, nuance and experience occurring in these time projections, which have a very complex content. Ao, shortly after I discovered the use of this installation and after the American scientists started to get used to it, at a diplomatic level, it had been decided that the Vatican should be contacted and should see the reports, but only the ones concerning the life of Jesus. I considered this an able and at the same time surprising move, especially since it came at the proposal and even insistence of the Americans. But I soon realized it was not a decision made as an act of ethics and Christian morality, but it was done to apply a sort of faint diplomatic pressure on the papacy through some big surprises mentioned in these reports. I will also share some of them with you, but it's better to keep others a secret. Ao, of course, we also assumed that the Vatican might fully ignore that information because there was practically no concrete evidence but only some written reports. But the Americans mentioned that it might be decided to admit two or three cardinals as witnesses to the device and the underground ensemble in Bsky, which the Pope had already been informed about. As far as I know, there were some questions and delicate arguments based upon the true interests lying under this insistence to present the unknown aspects of Christianity to the papacy. But this is already a part of the diplomatic and political subtleties which I don't want to go into right now. Our surprise was that the Vatican answered quickly through a special courier that they had known about these aspects for many years. I later found out that some of the American secret services were also familiar with the source of those revelations, but the subject has continued to remain a relative mystery throughout time, even though there have been some echoes in the press as well. The Vatican's honesty has given a slightly ironic response to the attitude of the Americans, because they even offered to present a summary recording of Jesus's life as a means of verification of my reports. Some representatives of the Vatican were sent for discussions. From our side, General Obadiah was appointed together with one of the scientists who is a part of the Special Research Commission concerning the Bsky Underground Ensemble. Upon their return, the general confessed to me that he actually saw the recording of the most important aspects of the life of Jesus and his spiritual mission, and that these were identical, in the common points, with my reports. Of course, neither those recordings nor I could present all the life of Christ. For example, I was especially concentrating on the last part that concerned his actual spiritual mission, which lasted slightly over 3 years as the Christian texts mention. In reality, this period lasted 3.5 years, almost 4 years. But the Vatican had records of the life of Christ from his childhood, adolescence and youth, exactly those years about which we don't seem to know anything about his life. These are related aspects, however, which I don't want to talk about right now. But it is certain that the Vatican also holds a true mine of esoteric information which, for obvious reasons, they don't wish to publish. A Caesar stopped for a few moments to bring two tonic drinks from our food supplies. I remained silent and thought about the many implications that knowledge of this information would have on the modern world. I was also stunned at what Caesar told me, and I realized that, in reality, I have been living in a cobweb of misinformation and alteration of the truth. Ao, but this is only a small part of the total information I gathered during my projections into the history of this planet. Would TMD be truly stunned to find out the truth about the transformations which have taken place in time? Ao, but I saw some of them in the projection chamber 2 years ago, Ai said, puzzled. Ao, well, you still might have great surprises. Iatma talking about a particularization of the Akashic Cleach A tilde copyright S. The holographic images from the projection chamber show us, as is only natural, an overview of the evolution of the history of Earth and man. For example, we've seen the geological transformations that have taken place on this planet and especially where we, as intelligent human beings, came from. But I am now referring to precise moments in history, dramatic moments in the evolution of mankind, successions of dynasties, and enigmas that have laid a veil of mystery over many historical realities. Practically speaking, this area is almost inexhaustible. But later TMS go back to what I was telling you because we don't near TMT have much time left and we'll have to get going soon. Ai nodded in approval, hoping that I would get the chance to have, at a certain point in my life, that mysterious knowledge of the past and future of humanity. I was thus hoping to have the chance and ability to accomplish time projections with the help of that amazing machine. Ao, when I accomplished my first time projection and saw that group of people talking, I went to them. I told you I knew exactly who Jesus was, but what I did not TMT get to tell you was that there were also three women among the men who sat there. One of them sat right next to Christ, and I can tell you that, in that moment, I knew exactly who she was. I know that this is a very controversial subject, and yet I am sure that the records at the Vatican, together with this time travel device we used, would cause a massive earthquake in the Christian world. Things were presented in a wrong way, consciously, from the very beginning, and the most of the written evidence has been destroyed, even though some of the small remainder has been discovered recently. The historical truth is completely different, at least from this point of view. Unfortunately, this is a fundamental direction which, once changed, could in a TMT be changed again without causing great damage to the Christian Church. I was curious to see for myself when things were decided in this respect. Yet referring to a certain essential truth of the life of Jesus which few know and fewer can prove with hard evidence. That event happened shortly after the crucifixion of Christ, which you also saw in the holographic projections. I remember those shattering moments with a thrill. The almost unbelievable images were awfully realistic, and I must admit that they are almost the only ones, as far as I know, which were presented almost fully and correctly in the authentic Christian texts. It TMS true that their description is a bit sensationalized or polished, but all in all, they present the historical truth. I've also noticed discrepancies as well as omissions, but I believe these are relatively meaningless compared with the main element, namely the crucifixion of Christ. For example, he was not helped by anyone to carry the wooden log on his back up to the hill where many people were crucified. There was an attempt to do so. A woman and a man tried to help Christ, at the base of their slope, but they were brutally sent away. Furthermore, in the beginning, there weren't many people on the way to his crucifixion. It TMS true that they tried to kill Christ, and here the intervention of the Roman soldiers was commendable. The madness of the crowd, however, truly started only after one of the soldiers was almost killed by a rock that struck him in the head. The movement forward was then blocked and the crowd started to make a fuss. The situation suddenly became tense and, as Caesar told me when he described the moments from the temple in Jerusalem, I saw people gathering quickly on both sides of the road. In a few minutes, there was an indescribable helter-skelter. There was a lot of dust, and the images then showed Christ falling on his knees with his head down, brought down by the weight of the wooden log he was carrying on his shoulders. At the same time, several soldiers on horseback arrived and re-established order to a certain degree. The crowd was covered with an unexplainable wave of anger. Those who stood on both sides of the road were throwing stones and many other objects, both at Jesus and at the soldiers. Many men were then beaten and wounded. Only after the actual crucifixion, which I did not see in the holographic images, did things start to settle down slightly.